Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle, and you know us. We are your people dashboard for small and medium companies. We know a lot of you HR and people teams out there want to be data-driven. You want to have more confident decision-making. You want to see and understand the data behind your workforce, yet you have so many different HR systems that you're pulling messy spreadsheets and trying to pull that together. And some of you are doing it at 2 a.m. and it's frustrating and it's painful and you know there has to be a better way. Well, look no further because Employee Cycle has created that people dashboard to solve your problem. You can go to employeecycle.com and learn how our people dashboard has pre-built integration connectors to your favorite systems like Bamboo HR, Namely, Sapling, Zenefits, TriNet, 15.5, Office Vibe, Lattice, you name it, to be able to pull in your data into one place so you can view, share, track, and analyze all that people data together. Go to employeecycle.com, sign up for a demo, or if you want, set up a free trial. Check it out. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle because today we have an awesome guest. So please help me welcome to the show, Rachel Fletcher. She's the head of people operations at Big Nerd Ranch. And today we're going to discuss how to move your company DEI strategy from a motto to a movement. Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Woo! Rachel, welcome.
Thank you, Bruce. That's quite an introduction.
Well, you deserve it, especially because this is your very first podcast.
It is.
So I'm looking forward to this being super awesome. But Rachel, we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how, and that's by asking you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
That's a great question. So like many professionals, you typically fall into HR, as did I, about 15 or so years ago. Now I relocated from New York to Atlanta, and I was offered a fantastic opportunity at a commercial real estate company called Colliers International to work directly with the CEO, supporting him with a number of his initiatives, and ended up, you know, coming on board as his administrative services manager. I assisted him and the CFO mainly. That was back in 2006. In 2008, when the recession hit, the CFO ended up resigning, and he pushed me into a HR generalist role. And, you know, I had to, you know, learn everything and everything, and loved it, did a good job, thank goodness, and kind of fell into HR and worked my way up that way. And then I went back and got certified, and I've been doing it ever since. I jumped into the startup world back in 2013 and ended up working for a residential real estate startup company that was headquartered in Duluth, Georgia, but they had funding from a financial capital company out of San Francisco, and got my feet into, you know, how the startup world worked and high growth companies. And that's kind of what I've done. And, you know, in the last 5 to 6 years, I've been heading up high growth organizations, and love every minute of it. So, you know, it was quite a ride, but, you know, that's how I fell into it.
Awesome. And thanks so much for that background. So today we're talking about your company DEI strategy and how to make it sustainable. But before we go into making it sustainable, can you tell us how you really look at a DEI strategy based off of a lot of current events that are happening across the U.S.? A lot of companies are saying that they're aligned with Black Lives Matters, or that they now want to make sure that they're doing things to remove systemic racism or discrimination or bias. But from your perspective, at the core, what is DEI?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's a really, really great question. So for me, diversity and inclusion should be part of a company's core values. And I think that's where a lot of companies get stuck because, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement is nothing new. It's been around for a long time. And, you know, you could argue that some companies have started initiatives in line with things that may be going on in America, and then they kind of taper off as things become quiet and then, you know, speed back up when, you know, things are in the news again. And so for me, I personally think that diversity and inclusion should be part of a company's values because, you know, everyone has different values. Everyone stands in different places. And you know, so for me, it's a value prop, in my opinion.
And do you see the equity in the DEI the same way, or do you see that as something different?
Again, it depends on the company, right? Because you want it to be authentic. There are certain companies that couldn't have a diversity and inclusion plan because people wouldn't take it seriously. But for the right company, yeah, there's definitely equity. Yeah, I definitely agree with the equity.
Perfect. So we're going to break DEI down into their own respective parts of this conversation because they're so big. And so let's start with diversity first. How are you thinking about making sure that you're not just screaming out that your company is diverse and it becomes almost like a tagline or a motto, but it actually is a sustainable movement and baked into the culture of your company?
No, that's actually a great question because over the years, Big Nerd Ranch has made several attempts to, you know, put together diversity and inclusion initiatives. And, you know, we've been successful, but we know that we still have work to do. But as it relates to diversity, you know, it's definitely about defining where you stand as a company and putting together measurable goals to ensure that you are, you know, in line with the values of the company and, you know, putting together a sustainable solution because, you know, again, diversity is, in my opinion, it's an environment that is inclusive for all, right? And, you know, in order to achieve that, you have to have a plan and you have to be able to, you know, have the same message from the top down in order to even start in the first place.
So as a company that works with a lot of HR and people leaders like yourself with their data, one of the things that we find is that diversity means a totally different thing to almost every company we speak with and we work with. Sometimes diversity is we want more women. Sometimes it means that companies want more women in specific roles, specifically around STEM, so engineering and more technical roles. Sometimes diversity means hiring people from more underrepresented groups and backgrounds. So it could be Black people, people from Latinx or Hispanic backgrounds. Diversity could be veterans or different people from a variety of sexual orientation backgrounds. So how do you view diversity? And when people are coming up with a plan, how should they go about figuring out what that looks like?
Yeah. So, I mean, as I mentioned, it's more about, you know, inclusion. To me, diversity is all of that. It's an environment that is inclusive for all, whether you're Black, white, brown, you know, whether you're a veteran, whether you're female. That's how Big Nerd Ranch sees it anyway. It's inclusion for all. We don't have a category. We look at it as just equal opportunity for any underrepresented group.
I like that. And so if that's the case, and I'm always in real time trying to think about what are HR leaders going to hope that I ask, because obviously they're not here. And so the question that I could see some HR leaders wanting to know based off of your answer is, if you want diversity and you currently don't have it, and if you're going to have a plan for it, then that means that plan probably needs to include some type of strategy around sourcing people from different underrepresented backgrounds. And if you're trying to bring people from every possible underrepresented background possible, then what does that plan look like from a sourcing standpoint?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So let me back up for a minute and tell you more about our plan. Because, you know, naturally, when people think about diversity and inclusion, the first thing they think about is recruitment. And that happened at Big Nerd Ranch. And I decided to take us a step back because, in my opinion, recruitment shouldn't be the first step. You don't just go out and start sourcing for every underrepresented group in the US, right? You first of all need to do a survey on your organization and see A, where the areas of improvement need to come from. And, you know, do you have the infrastructure in place to do that? So, you know, for example, if we were looking at people of color, right? The first thing I would do is look at, you know, the number of people of color that we currently have at Big Nerd Ranch and go from there, because majorities breed culture, right? And so if we only have 5% of people of color at Big Nerd Ranch, just as an example, then there's no point in me going out and sourcing for, you know, people of color and bringing them into an environment that's not trained or conducive for that. And so, you know, that was step one for us, doing a survey, looking at the areas where we needed to do more work. And then after that, starting a recruitment plan. And so, you know, we're doing it based on what we can set up successfully for now. And then we'll continue to expand on that as we grow. So we're not just going out and sourcing for every underrepresented group. We're not doing it that way. It's kind of segmented by, you know, what we can handle now, what we can handle next year, and so on and so forth. Does that make sense?
It does. And how did you go about figuring out putting budget and allocating resources to those different segments? What did that look like?
Yeah, so the first segment is training. So we've put together a budget for training, because before you go out and start recruiting for any underrepresented group, you need to make sure that, you know, the managers and the employees in place are trained and that they're aware of, you know, biases and what inclusion means. And so right now we're focused on training and making sure that our workforce is aware of any biases that they may have, and, you know, that our managers are equipped to handle diversity before we just go out and hire people and bring them in, because that's not going to be sustainable, right? And we want people to stay. So right now we're investing in training. That's step one. And once we have our workforce trained on diversity, then we'll go to phase two, which is recruiting.
I love the fact that you're starting with training. And I hope that a lot of companies really caught on, and the people who are listening caught on to that gem, because you're focusing on the root cause versus focusing on the surface. And you're right. Most companies do go straight to sourcing. But if you don't fix the root cause, you don't remove the bias or the discrimination in the hiring process, then in essence, you're just going to get a lot of people applying, but then no one getting hired. And you're not really going to hit your goal. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Or even worse, they'll be hired and they won't stay.
Right. Right. Which ultimately affects turnover, employee morale, and you just wasted a lot of money. So the next letter we want to go to in DEI is the E, and that's equity. I think this is the most ambiguous for a lot of people because people and HR leaders and companies have been screaming D&I for a long time, but now we have DEI. So to you, what does equity mean, and what does it look like to put together a plan and a strategy to create an equitable workforce?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, to me, equity is a quality of being fair and impartial, right? And so, you know, to me, it's the investment as it relates to opportunity and advancement. Tough question. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a very short answer, but to me, that's how I view equity. It's the investment in diversity and inclusion.
And when we're talking about equity, as I'm talking to other people leaders, sometimes I get equity in the form of making sure that people have an equal opportunity to get promotions, an equal opportunity to go for specific roles. What does that look like for you?
Okay. So I guess some people are viewing equity as the workforce in general. If that's the case, I could see why they would look at it that way. That's a good way of looking at it, actually. I mean, again, to me, equity, in my opinion, is the investment in your workforce. And obviously, that reaps benefits of its own, right? Going back to what I was saying about training and then recruiting, if you do it that way, you're going to have more equity value in the tenure of your employees, and you're going to have more equity value in the onboarding experience for underrepresented groups. So I can see why some would say that. But to me, I think equity is the investment, and it's the workforce, essentially.
That's interesting. And so my wife is a real estate agent, and the analogy that just, this picture that just painted in my mind is, when you buy a house, and then over time, when you make investments in your home, then you have more equity in your home. And so basically, you're saying that the equity is the investment that you're putting into your workforce, so that over time, when they have a longer tenure and they've been working for you for a period of time, they're providing more value to the workforce.
Yeah, that's how I see it. I'm sure there are many different opinions on this, but that's how I see it.
Awesome. That's an interesting way of looking at it. I like that. And so we've covered the D and the E, and now let's get to the I, inclusion. This shouldn't be as ambiguous as I believe it is to a lot of companies, but I'm curious, how do you view inclusion, and how do you think others should as well?
Yeah. So for me, I view inclusion as, you know, the creation of the right environment for all beliefs, all values, all indifference, right? And so, you know, there have been many cases where underrepresented groups have joined companies and they haven't felt included at all, to the point where they've left because they just don't fit in. And, you know, to a degree, you could argue that, you know, inclusion is tied to culture. Because if your culture is one way and then you have, you know, an underrepresented person that comes in, they may not fit with the culture, so to speak. And so for me, inclusion is about coming up with different ways to, you know, create a culture that is inclusive for everyone.
Over the past few years, it seems as though we've moved into a place where people are talking less about culture fit and more about culture ad, and saying that if you have a certain culture, it shouldn't be about people fitting into it, but it should be about people adding to it. And that culture should be this fluid thing, this breathing thing that continues to grow and change based off of whatever your current workforce is at that point. Do you agree with that? And is that the way that you look at inclusion?
That's an interesting one. That is a tough one initially, sitting from where I sit. Because as I mentioned before, I find that majorities breed a culture of their own, right? And so culture ad is great if you have the infrastructure in place to allow for that. But I mean, I guess I'm more an advocate for culture fit and over time building the right culture that has that inclusive environment. Because culture ad, for example, if you're adding a whole new set of people into a culture that's already been, you know, constructed, that's going to be a bad experience for both sides, in my opinion.
Got it. And then to end this interview, I would like for you to just spend a little time telling our audience how you're going about this and how they can think about not just making this entire DEI strategy something that they're doing for the time being, because there's a lot of social injustice and a lot of sound bites on the news about this, but how to actually make this long-term and sustainable.
Yeah. No, I love that question. So I've defined our diversity and inclusion plan into three areas. So step one was defining our positioning statement, right? Where do we stand as a company? And there were a number of considerations as a leadership team that we looked into. You know, we reviewed data on our current demographic And then we also, you know, had a leadership agreement on where we stand as a company. Because if you're not aligned at the top, then, you know, it's not going to work as you push stuff down. So, you know, we defined a positioning statement on diversity and inclusion as a company. And then, you know, phase two was deciding on goals and areas that we were going to focus on as, you know, a leadership team. Was it community outreach? Was it training and resources? Was it strategic partnerships with high schools or colleges, things like that? Was it a hiring initiative? And so we identified the areas that we were going to focus on. And then phase three was creating an external communication plan to our workforce as to what it is that we were going to do. Based on the data review, you know, we decided to start with training because, you know, our demographics are not that diverse, candidly speaking. And so, you know, as I mentioned, culture breeds, you know, the environment. And so, you know, we started with training. And then obviously once we get the training in place, then we will start to, you know, focus on recruiting diverse groups from all backgrounds in order to give, you know, those groups a good employee experience and a great onboarding experience. And then on the side of that, we're always focused on community. And so, yeah, that's how we rolled out our plan. It was definitely defining the positioning statement as to where you stand, putting together goals and, you know, deciding on what, you know, we were going to focus on and then, you know, rolling out the plan and communication that, you know, we have a bi-weekly meeting, company-wide meeting, and we talk about it every time just to keep people informed as to where we are. And, you know, it was just really setting expectations so that people understood that this isn't something that we're going to change overnight, right? This is something over time that will evolve and we will iterate on until we get it to where we need to. And so as long as you communicate expectations, I think you'll set up yourself for success because, you know, people want immediate results. We're in an instant gratification time, right? And so, you know, it's so important to communicate expectations. I would say that communication was probably the biggest piece of, you know, the plan once we decided where we wanted to go. So yeah, that's what we did.
Awesome, Rachel. Thanks so much for sharing that. And thanks so much for being such an awesome podcast guest and sharing all your wisdom and knowledge around such an important topic like DEI. So thanks again for being on the show.
Woo! Rachel! Woo!
Thank you.
So where can people find you and Big Nerd Ranch online?
Yeah. So, you know, they can go to www.bignerdranch.com. You know, we have an array of services that we offer to companies. We're a mobile dev shop, so we build apps, but we also have a teaching arm as well. So, you know, we build incredible apps and we teach people to do the same. And so, you know, for any companies that are looking for an app that they either want to build or modify, Big Nerd Ranch has been around for 20 years. And, you know, we're known for, you know, building iOS and Android and web apps. And so, you know, that's what we do. And that's where you can find us. And for those engineers out there that are looking at, you know, immersive boot camps, you know, Big Nerd Ranch is definitely a place you should check out for that too.
Awesome. And we'll definitely include all of that contact information in the show notes. So all you listeners out there, if you enjoy this episode as much as Rachel and I did making it, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes to show that you care and that we're providing great content. Also, if this is the very first time you're listening to any of our interviews and you came here because you are either already a mega super fan of Rachel and you just had to hear what she wanted to say, or you thought that this topic was really very compelling, but now you're looking for more interesting Employee Cycle guests, well, you can subscribe to the Employee Cycle podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to awesome podcasts. And we have a new thing for you. We just launched thankyouhr.com. That's right. We launched the site. First of all, can't believe thankyouhr.com was available in 2020. Go figure. But we have it, and we're launching thankyouhr.com so that you can go there and watch a video, because we want to show our gratitude and appreciation for all HR and people leaders all throughout the world for all the challenges that they have helped their workforce navigate through during 2020. So please go to thankyouhr.com. And last but not least, all you people, ops, and HR leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.